Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soci.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soci. This show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, we made it through another week. Hope you're staying safe. Hope you're staying healthy. Hope you're staying sane. Hope you're being good to one another. And hopefully you've been watching some films that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. And we will get to the grab a pencil portion of the show in a little bit. But first, of course, Indie Film Fest premiere Thursday night. It is running through May 19th. You can go to indiefilmfest.org for all the information. There's drive-ins, there's virtuals, there's all kinds of goodies. And I recently, very recently, had a chat with Craig Mintz, the artistic director of Indie Film Fest, to talk about, we talk a little bit about the Oscars, you know, because that happened this past Sunday. Whew, boy. And then we talk more about Indie Film Fest. IndieFilmFest.org. Here's my chat with their artistic director, Craig Mintz. Enjoy. Now, Craig, before we get into the film festival, it's only been 5-6 days. Your thoughts on the Academy Awards?
Oh, man. I was really excited and honestly caught off guard. Like, I wasn't, like, ready for it. It kind of snuck up on me.
You're not the first person to say that, because I think there was a lot of people that felt like they were crunching for an exam. I got to watch, which I think is common. But I think it's common. But because of the last year or so, I think it threw more than one person off.
Like Friday, I was like, oh, my gosh, the Oscars are Sunday. Like, I got to figure out like what do I need to watch before Sunday hits?
So what did you watch?
Honestly, like, I've seen most of them.
Okay.
I didn't feel like I was obligated to, like, invest a lot of time. You know, the shorts are obviously very hard. You have to see those, like, in that capacity. I felt like I was good. And I didn't know what to expect. You know, they kept teasing, like, that it was going to be a production, more, like, in tune with creating a film. And I was like, this could be pretty cool. And I feel like they swung for the fences, and I think they landed. I don't know if they hit a home run on it, but, like, I feel like I really liked kind of how they executed the Oscars this year. As far as, like, the selections and all of that, you know, it's up to an opinion that everybody, I would imagine, has. But, like, I thought the broadcast itself was new. It was fresh. I liked the focus on the storytelling of the actors, of everything that is the craft of what the Oscars celebrates. I think all in all, it was good. I mean, you look at the numbers afterwards, and then they were scary. But, like,
right.
I don't know if that's because of what they did or if it was because of the pandemic. I feel like there's probably a lot to digest there. But I feel like it was a good presentation. Mm-hmm. Given a down year, I feel like they really did swing for the fences.
And I wonder now if, and I'll get to the baseball analogy, which I thought was perfect, Craig, but I think now, kind of like with the box office receipts, because you're streaming, because you can watch them, you know, a lot of these films on your phone and, you know, and streaming and on your computers, it's going to be, I think it's hard to figure out as far as either the ratings as well as the box office receipts. Is that fair?
For sure.
Yeah.
And how you value. And, I mean, whereas box office is privy to everybody, I feel like internal streaming services are internal, like Disney knows theirs.
Yep.
HBO and Warner Brothers knows theirs. Hulu knows theirs. So, like, there's no really good litmus test of, like, how successful something really is, you know, truly from a box office metric.
So we're gonna get basically not this past one, but the inauguration numbers before.
Correct.
Okay. I like that you use the baseball analogy, because I think what best sums up this year's ceremony was they did swing for the fences, but I think they stumbled rounding third and had to settle for a triple.
I would agree in that.
Because
they tripped up on the third place bag and they couldn't round to go home.
Yep. I mean, and kudos, I think it was Steven Soderbergh directed it, which explains all of the cameras, and it's almost a kind of a surveillance feel, or one of his films that he shot on phone. And and I know that they were trying to do everything they could to shake things up. If anybody wants to think that these awards are you know, planned in advance or rigged, they didn't want that final moment.
Yeah.
So,
correct.
I mean, that's
just, correct.
I mean, it was, you know, I know the Twitterverse just lost their minds when Best Picture was not the last category. I think you didn't have to shake every single thing up. So one, that happens. I understand the intent behind it, because okay, we want a more competitive category, but everybody under the sun was ready to hear a name that was just not read.
Correct.
So, but, you know, kudos to Mr. Hopkins, and boo for not letting him air his acceptance speech from Wales. That was a bit of a bummer.
Yeah, you know, and it was a tough situation.
Yeah.
Had by all. And I think everybody, like, internally, you know, Hopkins and even Chadwick Boseman's family, like, handled it with grace and, you know, with accolades that needed to happen. And it was just a weird situation, and it was amplified, which is what was just equally as weird. Like, it was held up on this pedestal. It didn't go the way that I would imagine a lot of people had hoped it would have gone, and it just went sour pretty quick.
Indeed. Was there any awards that you were excited for somebody receiving?
You know, I was a big fan of Sound of Metal and the sound engineering, which just blew my mind on that film.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty much a shoe-in, I think, in everybody's book that they were going to get that Oscar. But to see that actually take place and happen, I've never, in my years of, like, watching and appreciating film, have I ever been, like, treated to, you know, a film that used sound in such a robust manner,
mm-hmm.
and, like, it deservedly earned that Oscar, and I was very excited to see that one.
I'm with you on that. It kind of reminded me of when The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert was up for costume design. You're like, are you really going to give it to anybody else this year?
Yeah, like, why would you even think about it? Like, it was just, like, one of those experiences, and I watched it, like, on a laptop in the fall, and it was still amazing. And I was like, I can only imagine what this is like in, like, a Dolby surround sound theater,
mm-hmm.
From a sound perspective. And a lot of people don't really appreciate sound in that sense, but, like, it really does make a movie land properly when the sound mix is correct.
Yep, and the fact that it also got film editing. The moment that still scares me is the moment his hearing shifts, because I think people assume almost like a heart attack. It doesn't have to be, you know, while he's playing, when something is at its apex as far as sound, it can, you know, it goes at just a mundane moment, and that's terrifying.
For real, and that's what I liked about the film, is, like, I was like, where's the subtitles? Like, we should have subtitles in this sequence. And then it wasn't until, like, he truly lost his sound or his hearing that they shifted, or no, it was when he started to communicate in sign language that mm-hmm. we actually got subtitles at that point. And it was like, oh, I get it. Like, this makes total sense.
Yep, I agree. What was your favorite film from last year?
Oh, man, that's always a big question. I did really like Nomadland. It landed with me from a wanderlust kind of scenario,
mm-hmm.
Given everything going on with the pandemic and being kind of, like, sheltered up. And I mean, Frances McDormand, I mean, come on.
Yeah,
like, the woman can just land every role she hits. So that one really was a 1-2 punch for me in that sense. You know, I guilty pleasure. I really like Bill and Ted's Face of Music. let's be
okay,
honest.
All right.
I mean, I was a Bill and Ted fan growing up, so to see the completion of that saga was fantastic. maybe not an Oscar-worthy movie, but always very fun to watch.
That's all right. Yeah, Nomadland was my number one film last year. Very happy for Frances. I hope more people check out Chloe Zhao's early work, like The Rider. And,
oh, yeah.
And I know I'm not the first one to say that. My buddy Steven said that online. But, you know, it's one of those just
gorgeous
films. Well,
I'm excited for, like,
films.
Even her Marvel venture. She's doing The Eternals, like, in the fall season, winter season. And it's like, I can't wait to see what she does with a Marvel movie.
Yeah, that's wonders. That's hopeful on that case.
Yeah.
All right, shifting gears. So how is organizing a festival under these conditions?
Different, wildly different, in a sense that kind of everybody's priorities are all over the place. You know, studios are holding on to films. They're waiting for theaters to open back up for the most part. Some are releasing to, like, VOD. But you still have a pipeline of, like, independent, truly independent filmmakers that are out there, you know, peddling their wares and making sure that their films get seen by as many people as possible. So it's just the landscape shifted a little bit. But as far as, like, the quality of content, the amount of content, it's all still the same. Although I feel like once the summer really hits, like, the floodgate's going to open. And, you know, I feel like a lot of the Hollywood product that has been kind of sitting idle is just going to start flooding the market. So now's a really good time to be seeing, like, independent film, because I feel like they're getting the just dessert that is, you know, their time in the sun, so to speak. But all is well. Like, the film festivals, you know, the catalog of films that we have is amazing. We're really happy with the slate. And, you know, I think, you know, the festival world is still thriving. It's just adapted to more of a virtual style.
And, of course, you can check out indiefilmfest.org for information. How many submissions were this year?
Oh, my goodness. I'm not the right person to ask.
Okay.
I used to be able to know that number because I watched most of them. I don't anymore. I know we were ranking in the 700 to 800 submissions in the last couple of years. I don't know what the total is for this year, but it has to at least be that, if not more.
And my other guess was, and I'm going to ask you anyway, but, you know, has there been a lot of obviously small cast films shot on, you know, short, you know, interior work?
For sure.
Okay.
Sure. Very, very COVID friendly, like, productions you're seeing. And I think you'll probably see more so next year, like in the next kind of film festival cycle starting in the fall and rolling into our kind of next year. But yeah, you're seeing a lot of, like, single room, single scene shots, or shots with, like, just one person really playing to the environment that they're producing in. But, I mean, those can still be very effective.
Yes, and hopefully a period piece as soon as possible.
Yes, it would be nice to see a good period piece.
So how did opening night? First off, I'm really excited that, I mean, I guess not, I shouldn't say excited, but the one of the benefits that has happened in the last year plus has been a surge in drive-in activity. So how did opening night go? You did, and let the folks know what you guys did.
So yeah, we're still on the front end of kind of everybody returning back to what is normal, being vaccinated. I think we still are about a month, month and a half, maybe 2 months to, like, really starting seeing people in theaters. So we wanted to keep things still very safe. And a majority of the content for this year, we're still doing virtual, which has its benefits. Not only can people here in Indiana watch these films, but even nationally and internationally, and in some instances, see a lot of these films. But we also wanted to make sure, you know, our logic is we always really like the dynamic and the energy of seeing a film in person. The experience of seeing a movie is way different than watching it at home necessarily. So we wanted to make sure we peppered in some, like, person-to-person or in-person kind of experience. So we made sure that we had some drive-in still to keep people safe, but also to get people kind of congregating, kind of very in a safe box, if you will, of a car. So we were at Tibbs. We're at Tibbs three times through the course of the film festival, every Thursday of the film festival, basically. Last night was the first night we showed an Australian film called The Dry, starring Eric Bana, which was absolutely amazing, followed by a sneak peek of a locally made film called Hell is Empty, peppered with a couple of shorts locally made as well. Next Thursday, we have a Magnolia release film called Swan Song, and followed by a documentary called Workhorse Queen, which is the really good double feature on that end. And then the last Thursday, we have a Sundance title called First Date, followed by a block of Hoosier-made shorts. So virtually, you can watch pretty much about 95% of the catalog, but we also want to make sure that people have the opportunity to get out and kind of leave the house to experience those films in that shared environment.
See, I always dreamed, and I've talked with Abdul-Hakim Shabazz about trying to get in on the art house drive-in concept, and you guys are leaning on that idea just a little bit. I'm a little nervous.
It's an interesting concept, and, you know, I think on a global scale, I don't know if it works.
No, nobody said I had a head for business.
Yeah, right? Like, I don't know if I would want to invest in that market. But at the same time, like, when you experience, like, an art house movie like The Dry, let's say, in a drive-in capacity, it's so unique, it's so fun, and it's something that you'll never see kind of in that realm that, like, you're like, I can see this. It's just, like, can you do that every week, you know, or four times a week or whatever?
Yeah. I just had the fantasy of, you know, hot dogs and popcorn and the kids in the front, in front of the screen playing in the jungle gym while I'm watching Max von Sydow play chess with death. That's all.
Exactly, right? Like, you're like, the best of both worlds, but maybe not so much.
Dozens of people would be thrilled.
Twos of fours of people would enjoy that.
Yeah, exactly. So how, and then also how, as far as, because I know what is a tradition at film festivals is the Q&A with the filmmakers and the people involved. Are those virtually happening or any virtually happening?
Oh, like more so than ever, honestly. And that's another side benefit of kind of a virtual festival is like everybody's virtual at this point. So Zoom and Skype are not new concepts. And, you know, we've just about a majority of the films that we programmed, we're doing, they're not necessarily live. We are like accepting questions, on some of them, but they are playing after just about every title. Like tomorrow morning, I'm doing one with the cast and crew for the film called Inspector Ike. And it'll play after every screening. So as virtually as you watch those, there will be a Q&A afterwards. So, the accessibility to talent is a lot easier. And then, you know, every screening after that, people will have access to those Q&As. So it's actually pretty neat in that atmosphere.
Okay. Of course, the film festival is running through, Indie Film Fest is running through May 19th. You can go to indiefilmfest.org to see all of the events and goings-on. What are some of the other events and goings-on between now and the 19th?
Well, like I said, there's a virtual component. There's an in-person component. Virtually, we operate just about every day. New titles drop every Thursday during the period. And then that same Thursday evening, we have programming at the Tibbs drive-in. You can get all that information at indiefilmfest.org.
And who came up with the idea of the 80s video game look online?
We've been migrating to that over the last couple of years. So if you've looked at any of our branding for the last 3 years, we've started to skew to 8-bit. and I feel like that's the right move, right? Like, everybody's fascinated by old school arcade games. And it works with kind of our youthful nature of film and storytelling. So it works really nice. And you know, our mascot is the film Squatch, as we call him. And he is now in 8-bit form. If you go to our website, you can actually get a T-shirt with a 8-bit version of our film Squatch. And it's it's good to see him kind of in that realm.
So just enough to remind us of some games without facing legal suits from big-time gaming organizations.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. So I guess along with the festival, how are things at the organization as far as year-round events?
You know, that's really where we're starting to focus a lot of our attention after the festival, now that we can start really planning on some year-round in-person events. We've got a lot on the docket, nothing that we're ready to announce, but, like, you can rest assured that, like, Roving Cinema's coming back, Serial Cinema's coming back. We're hoping to start bringing in, like, a Film to Fork, and a lot of the year-round programming that we had in place will start returning, you know, bigger and better than ever. You know, we've had, you know, about a year to keep planning a lot of these things and honing in on refining them. So what we've got kind of planned for the next year after, you know, this film festival is going to be pretty amazing.
Cool. And you can check it out at indiefilmfest.org. Check out everything that's going on there. What, Craig, what's the first film you're going to watch for fun when this festival's over?
Probably Cruella. Honestly, I'm fascinated by Disney's move in a lot of these instances with these anti-heroes. And, you know, I'm a big Emma Stone fan.
So, ah.
I feel like Cruella at the drive-in, like, I'm in the drive-in mode now, so I'll probably go see it at Tib, with, like, a big bucket of popcorn and, like, maybe a couple of tenderloin sandwiches. I don't know what I should be selling at the concession stand. I think is going to be my guilty pleasure watch after the film festival.
Well, as Nigella Lawson once said, if you get pleasure, why feel guilty?
Yeah, right?
Indie Film Fest is happening through May 19th. You can go to indiefilmfest.org, check everything out, and take a chance on some stuff you haven't seen before.
I promise there's something there that everybody will enjoy, and we can almost point you in the direction of a half dozen other movies that you never thought you would enjoy.
Craig, always a pleasure.
Same, my friend.
That was Craig Mintz, the artistic director of Indie Film Fest. Indie Film Fest is running through May 19th. Go to indiefilmfest.org for all the information. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Before we get to the grab a pencil portion of the show, I will tell you what I watched this week and what is available streaming at the drive-in, Sammy Terry stuff, and all that good stuff. All right. Opening this weekend is a crime thriller called The Virtuoso. This stars Anson Mount. Now, full disclosure, I've not seen Star Trek Discovery. This is my first time really noticing this actor. I went through IMDb, and he's one of those guys where I'm like, oh, I've seen this, I've seen that. But he plays a hitman with a very, very sincere code of ethics and laws. And we know because we are given lots of voiceover, lots of kind of lifeless voiceover about his rules and his ethics and having a lower heart rate and showing no urgency and trusting your planning and all of this stuff. And I understand he's supposed to be a calm, cool character, but the voiceover is kind of Harrison Ford at Blade Runner level. We get a voiceover lecture on how to be an assassin. The other thing of note of this film, actually the main reason why I was checking this film out of curiosity, is Anthony Hopkins is involved. Congrats to Mr. Hopkins for winning his second Academy Award. Again, not the ending anybody wanted, and I was voting for Chadwick Boseman, but congrats. But he gets to have one of these Anthony Hopkins-type roles where he comes off the bench and is basically the boss of this hitman. Just known as the Virtuoso. No names, just titles, just descriptions of who they are. And the Virtuoso winds up having a hit assignment that he's not been able to shake off, and he goes on a quick assignment looking for White River. No, not the state park, although this is one of those films where you're supposed to follow the cinematic puzzle and who is the target and who is after him. And, of course, it's one of these films, if you're a name actor, you got a good shot at being a major plot point in this film. And you have folks like Eddie Marsan, Abby Cornish as the waitress, and David Morse shows up as a deputy. So it's a who gonna do it kind of thing. It's just that the voiceover aspect of it, and I get it because we can't have him narrating or talking out loud to himself, but it's heavy-handed. And once we get a nice scene with, there's a one monologue from Anthony Hopkins in a cemetery with his young protege about the problems of the job and what he has had to do and what he did in combat. And there's a moment where we get from Anthony Hopkins a mixture of charm and menace. And gee, you think he's going to be a part of the plot when it's all said and done? Of course. So yeah, no surprises here. If you're into assassin thrillers, here you go. It's out there, and I watched it. Yeah, and the CG, there's a CG moment that's just a little silly. And even a one cry of agony sounds like it was done in post. But yeah, kind of a disappointment, even though you got one nice scene from Anthony Hopkins, which feels like it's the reason why he took the part and the check, of course. Okay, from Indie Picks, I got not one, not two, but three films from South Africa made in the 80s. This is a part of their Retro Africa series. And we're told from the video and in its campaign that hundreds of films that were made in South Africa during the apartheid years were basically just lost, destroyed, gone, forgotten. And so kudos to the folks that are able to pick up some of these films and put them out, in the case of IndiePix, the Retro Africa series. The best is a film called Faceless Man. We also have Ambushed, and we have Run for Your Life. These are films, they all have a few things in common. One, obviously from the 80s. Two, they're barely over an hour, and looking back, thank goodness. And three, these filmmakers love American action films, and they wanted to make their versions of the American action films of the 1980s. Faceless Man is the best of the lot. It is an innocent man dragged into an assassination plot. There are plot points that happen or don't happen and are not explained, that it's almost like The Room or Miami Connection when it comes to connection of plot and logic. Basically, a guy who winds up embroiled in this assassination plot goes to the police. There is the Kaiser Soze type character known as Faceless Man, and it starts to become, who is Faceless Man? Even though this is a very low budget film and they only have a handful of actors in this film. Really no gray area as far as the characters and who they are. Stilted dialogue, and the acting is not the strongest. But this was fun to watch, and I'll get to the other films in a sec. Then we have Ambush from 1988. This is about a game ranger and his assistant who wind up going after rebel soldiers who have abducted the game ranger's wife and his son. Another moment of the son going to school and just spouting exposition. There's a lot of exposition spouting and exposition emotions going on. I am angry. Somebody has to pay. That sort of thing. And then we have Run for Your Life, a story of two friends, one black, one white, who go on a cross-country running trip, and they stumble upon an illegal drug ring. And all of these three films have a feeling of, even though they are barely over 60 minutes, there are times where it feels padded. Run for Your Life has a very funny moment in the credits where it's just the rubbing of calves for over a minute, stretching and rubbing of ointment because the two characters are going to go on a long distance run. People going from it, and it's just, you start to riff tracks by just the sheer funniness of it. Funniness, I said that. Of, you know, going from a car and walking all the way to the front door or to the warehouse, or going from point A to point B when it could be a lot tighter. It's just really funny stuff. And I know it's not supposed to be funny, but I enjoyed each of these films, especially Faceless Man, because it is a reminder of how cookie cutter and how bad the majority of the 80s action films could be, and the synth score to boot with all three. But what helps is, even though it feels padded at times, they're short. I could imagine a 90-minute or a 100-minute or a two-hour version of something like Run for Your Life or Faceless Man or Ambush. So it's got that going for it. It is entertaining to watch in a midnight movie kind of way because of the level of acting and writing. But, man, at least it moves along. And so it kind of falls into my grindhouse rule where a lot of mainstream American mainstream films, not just American, a lot of films would just be a lot better if they were 70 minutes long. And Faceless Man, Ambushed, and Run for Your Wife, all a part of the Retro Africa series from IndiePix, qualify on all three of those. So, yeah, if you want to get some sandwich, you know, some beer and pizza, or some African food and pizza, and enjoy these for what they are, because this is more entertaining than most of the cookie-cutter stuff that we were forced to check out at our local video store, not just Blockbuster. Anyway, look for the IndiePix Retro Africa series from IndiePix. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org over at IU Cinema. Running through May 5th is the virtual screening of the 1927 silent film The Kid Brother. Running through May 12th is The Gold Rush. Wednesday, May 5th through Wednesday, May 19th, the 1938 comedy of Pygmalion. And Tuesday, May 11th, a special virtual event at 7 o'clock, IU 2020 Part 3. It says, join us for a virtual film introduction, screening, and interactive Q&A with the Indiana University Office of the Provost and Executive Vice President and with students featured in and behind the scenes of IU 2020. All of that happening over at IU Cinema. Over at the Skyline Drive-In this weekend, they have Mortal Kombat and Nobody. And next week, Wrath of Man. That's the new film from Guy Pearce and Jason Statham. And the very first Death Wish from Charles Bronson. So that is happening May 7th over at the Skyline Drive-In. Sammy Terry has a live show coming up, Facebook Live, May 7th at 8 p.m. on Friday, May 7th at 8 p.m. So go to SammyTerry.com or the Sammy Terry Facebook page for the live show on May 7th. What's the film? Not telling you. Go look it up yourself. I'm sorry. You have to look up Sammy Terry. It's just fun. And over at the Art Craft Theater in Franklin, depending on when you're listening to this show, May 1st at 2 and 7:30 p.m., they're showing Newsies. And then on May 7th and 8th at 2 and 7:30 p.m., Dr. Strangelove. May 14th and 15th at 2 and 7:30 p.m., The Wizard of Oz. And May 21st and 22nd, 2 and 7:30 p.m., One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Now, we mentioned that the Indie Film Fest is happening over at the Tibbs Drive-In on Thursdays. Here's what's happening the rest of the weekend. On Screen 1, the R-rated Mortal Kombat and Godzilla vs. Kong. Now, I joked with Craig earlier about the Art House Drive-In that I've been joking about for years. Well, thank you, Tibbs. Screen 2, Nomadland, and The Father. So you got a chance to see both Academy Award-winning films on a drive-in screen. Go for it. Screen 3, Separation and The Unholy. And then on Screen 4, Nobody and In the Earth. All happening at the Tibbs Drive-In. All right, friends, grab a pencil. Here's what you've been watching this week. We start with our very own Richard Probst, fellow IFJA member, who writes, best summer ever, released to streaming this week, won the Richard D. Probst Social Impact Award at Heartland, a musical with an integrated cast of actors with and without disabilities. Thank you, Richard, and congratulations, Richard. Gregory writes, three billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri, because my niece, who's a senior at Western Carolina, was visiting us. The film was actually filmed in Asheville, North Carolina. The store she works in was converted into the police department. Well, thank you, Gregory. World Cinema Programmer at Indie Film Fest writes, obviously, been rewatching the Indie Film Fest films before we let them loose on the public. Both Black Milk and Teresa 37 are fabulous. One is visually stunning shots of the nomads in the Gobi Desert, and the other one, a small film about one woman's struggle with infertility and fitting in. Thank you, gang. So that is happening on Twitter. On Facebook, we start with Gretchen, who writes, Octopus Teacher. We loved it. I did finally watch Octopus Teacher on Monday, and I want it noted, my lovely wife, Lynn, she lets me call her Mrs. Soce on the radio, got to see it before me, which happens sometimes, and without giving anything away, loved it. It looked great. I'm still voting for Time and probably Crypt Camp on my ballot if I had one, but the big moment that happens near the end, I should have seen coming, I didn't, and I wept. So, yes, go check out Octopus Teacher, this year's Best Documentary Feature winner at the Academy Awards. Andrea writes, The Imitation Game. Joe writes, Get On Up, the 2018 Robin Hood, and At Eternity's Gate. Britt writes, Cars 2, Kung Fu Panda 1 and 2, the 2016 Ghostbusters, Puss in Boots, The United States versus Billie Holiday, and Tina. Sam Watermeyer writes, Blood Creek, Pacific Heights, and Little Miss Sunshine because Alan Arkin won Best Supporting Actor for it. That's right, Sam. Thank you. Cassie writes, The Way We Were. First time I saw it, I loved it. Kelly writes, Coming to America, the original, and Wedding Crashers. I can watch them both over and over again. It's kind of sad, actually. Nah, it's okay, Kelly. It's fine. Eric writes, Horrible Bosses 2, Game Night, Tag, and Monty Python's The Meaning of Life. Teresa writes, Hidden Figures, Get Out, The Will Smith Aladdin, Crazy Rich Asians, and Unleashed. Mark writes, Juliet of the Spirits and The Dead Don't Die. Joshua writes, Mortal Kombat and finished season one of For All Mankind. Lou Harry writes, El Rey de la Fiesta, The Catch, Workhorse Queen, Inspector Ike, and the Goodman Theater's Measure for Measure. Abby writes, Tenacious D in The Pick of Destiny. And I watched The Artist a few years ago because it won so many awards. Not my cup of tea. Steven writes, This Sporting Life, Baudu Saved from Drowning, La Chienne, Canoa, which should have been far more interesting, and an old episode of the Loretta Young show called Masked of Violence, which I saw on TV as a child and which I've been trying to locate again ever since. Well, congratulations, Steven, and always, my lord, thank you for sharing. Jose writes, Together, Together, sweet little film. Yes, it is, Jose. I, of course, reviewed it on the show last week. Chad writes, I revisited Fatal Beauty. Mark writes, A Promising Young Woman. I have to memorize that line, that title. It's as much as I enjoyed it, and I was really happy that it got best screenplay, it is still kind of almost generic sounding title, but I still enjoyed it. You can hear me on All In earlier this week, but I had a brain freeze because of the title. So anyway, I gotta get better at that. Linda writes, 6 minutes to midnight. Missy writes, I finished up Funny Girl and started Dazed and Confused, watching season 4 of Better Call Saul. I don't even know what movies were nominated this year. Well, you can go to the Academy Award website, Missy, and find out. Dylan writes, Catwomen of the Moon. Tracy writes, Guilty. We watched Promising Young Woman. This took me down a Carey Mulligan path that then led to watching Drive, mostly because I love the music used in that film. Yeah, I'm with you on that, Tracy. I do love the kind of Tangerine Dream-esque music from Drive and the rest of the film as a whole. Rachel writes, The Black Swan, the 1942 film. That's, of course, Tyrone Power and Maureen O'Hara. Devin writes, The Orange Years, the Nickelodeon story. Cassandra writes, I've wanted to watch so many movies lately, but time has eluded me. I did manage to catch Total Recall last weekend in between fits of cleaning the house. It happens, Cassandra. I'm assuming it's the original, not the remake, but you never know. Lisa writes, Keeping the Bees. Jessica writes, Southbound on Prime. I usually just like what I like, but sometimes a big winner at the Oscars will make me take interest in seeing it. Well, that's the thing, Jessica. I mean, it's... I'm always intrigued to see what folks are watching after the awards because of the curiosity stake. And, of course, it does business. RJ writes, Australia. Lee writes, Anything and Everything with Mads Mikkelsen in it. We'll leave you alone then, Lee. I know you want to be alone. It's okay. Joe writes, The Craft and The Craft Legacy 2021. Robert Muggy writes, Minari, St. Louis Blues, The Big Score. Fortunately, we were able to see all the key feature-length Oscar nominees, including all feature docs and international, prior to the ceremony. Thank you, Robert. Dave writes Birdman, great movie. Kate writes Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. Ray writes The Sheik, about the one and only. I suplex you, jabroni, if you don't talk about it. I have talked about it, Ray. I think I reviewed The Sheik this is the Iron Sheik, not Rudolph Valentino. So, you know, get off me, jabroni. But no, I really enjoyed the documentary about the Iron Sheik. Great story to tell. Still really enjoyed it. Nancy writes The Father and The United States versus Billie Holiday. Watched before the Oscars. Still need to watch Minari and Another Round. And congratulations for Another Round, for getting Best International Feature, and, of course, the director getting a director nod. Howell writes Nomadland, Another Round. Thank you, Howell. Both because of the Academy Awards. Susan writes The Ghost of Mrs. Muir, Avengers Endgame. Pitch perfect because I simply cannot turn it off no matter how many times I've seen it. It's like a drug. All right. Chris Lloyd writes, I wanted to watch the last few Oscar nominees. I hadn't, but ran out of time. Here Alone, The Mitchells vs. the Machines, The Virtuoso, and Cast a Dark Shadow. Julia writes, My Fair Lady, Red River, Hold Back the Dawn, and Live and Let Die. Brenda writes, Nomadland. Tiffany writes, Uncut Gems, The Devil All the Time, Bug, and I'm Just Effing with You. Now, I'm assuming that's the play Bug, the William Friedkin film version of the play with Michael Shannon and Ashley Judd, and not the Bug film from the 70s, I guess. Okay. Don writes Antebellum. It's M. Night Shyamalan level. Is it good or bad M. Night? That's the question. John writes the Broadway edition of Newsies and Road to Perdition. Doug writes 1962 movies, Boccaccio 70, David and Lisa, The Longest Day, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, The Music Man, A Period of Adjustment, and The Road to Hong Kong. And then adds, and with Pinocchio, I saw all the 2021 Oscar nominees. Congratulations, Doug. Michael writes Call of the Wild and Promising Young Woman. Frank writes Birds of Prey and The Death of Stalin. Nancy writes Another Round. Adrian writes Mank. Michelle writes 80% of Stowaway. Not 100%, but 80%. Andra Fay writes Nomadland and Miss Firecracker, with Cheryl chiming in. I love Miss Firecracker. Haven't seen it in years. Andra Fay, it was so great. Love Alfre so much. Alfre Woodard, of course. Austin, check out the Medium Cool podcast, friends. Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery, Chef, Moxie, Mortal Kombat, Inside Llewyn Davis, and Drag Me to Hell. Spencer writes, Q Into the Storm on HBO is an incredibly frustrating, well-made, super interesting documentary. And Aaron chimes in, it made me want to punch my TV. Please don't do that, Aaron. Thank you, Spencer. Molly writes Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and The Private Life of Henry VIII. Mary writes Some Like It Hot. Anthony writes Lucky, Harry Dean Stanton, a reflective film and decent story. Anthony, that was my number two film the year it came out, directed by the great John Carroll Lynch. Kathy writes Tears of the Sun. Robert writes Brittany Runs a Marathon. Sweet movie, that's better than I was expecting. A little preachy, though. That's fine. Deb writes Another Round. Mason writes Ratatouille. Joni writes, I watched the BBC production of Bleak House in one bingeful day. Oh, and I also watched the final season of Poldark again and was reminded why the final season of Poldark was so annoying. Well, you watched it. You wrote it on yourself. Michelle writes Promising Young Woman. Dustin writes The Third Man, The Last Picture Show, Animal House, Barefoot in the Park, the TV version. I'll get to that in a second. As You Like It, Mank, and Trial of the Chicago 7. Dustin, I'm so glad you got to see that version. So, friends, it's been a while since I've told this. In the early incarnations of HBO, they would film plays and air them. And one of the first one I saw was Barefoot in the Park with Richard Thomas and Bess Armstrong. And man, well, I got to tell Richard Thomas early on. Abdul and I had interviewed Richard Thomas when he was touring with 12 Angry Men. And we had a phone chat with him. And I got to say, because my wife and I saw him do art in London during our honeymoon with Patrick Duffy. yeah, we saw plays on our honeymoon. What about it? And but I got to say, between that and alluding to Wonder Boys, that Richard Thomas and I had something in common. We've both pretended to be married to Bess Armstrong and Frances McDormand. So anyway, this was a fun version, and I got to play the telephone repairman in Richmond Civics production many years ago. And Barbara Barry was the mom, and I couldn't remember who played my role. And I found out as I revisited it, because this is 1982. He was in that guy status at that time. The telephone repairman in this version was James Cromwell. So that's kind of fun. I did a role that James Cromwell did. So anyway, but Barefoot in the Park, Plaza Suite with Lee Grant and Jerry Orbach, a Bus Stop with Margot Kidder, Tim Matheson, Barry Corbin, Claude Akins, I'm trying to remember, Pat Hingle, Separate Tables, they did. Anyway, I thank HBO for showing plays in the early 80s because they introduced me to some stories I had not seen before. So anyway, Dustin, I'm glad you got to see that. Daniel writes, Victor Victoria, The Reluctant Debutante, Singing in the Rain, The Nance, Dream Girls, Rita Hayworth, and Men Created a Goddess, Blythe Spirit, the 1956 version, Dead Ringers, Adam's Rib, Dark Habits, The Elephant Man, Irma LaDuce, If a Man Answers, and If a Man Answers, Hang Up. It's all about the commas, friends. Terry writes episode 2 of Hemingway, Bamboozled, Cleo from 5 to 7, and Pale Flower. Kim writes, I care a lot. Michael writes, The Rental. John writes, one that blew by me, but not much of the rest of the world, the 2011 film in The Intouchables, with the incredible Omar Sy, whom I just seen in the first season of Lupin. Or I might not have paid any attention. Sy got a boatload of international awards for that film alone. Francois Cluzet shares the spotlight in that film. I believe that was the biggest money-making film in France when that came out, John. And, of course, they remade it with Kevin Hart and Bryan Cranston. So Janet writes, Limitless, Silver Linings Playbook, The Godfather, Godfather 2, and Argo. Pat writes, Palmer. Moveen writes, The Audition with Nina Haas and starring a Dietrich and Von Sternberg Festival. And starting of our Dietrich and Von Sternberg Festival, the kickoff is The Devil is a Woman with Femme Fatale, Marlena Dietrich. Very good. Chris writes, the 1979 timeless classic, Meatballs. Yep, when the hand goes up, the mouth goes shut. Hi, Mickey. Carrie writes, The Remains of the Day. Brian writes, I watched the new Mortal Kombat. It's spelled wrong on purpose, I guess. I know, we're old. Michelle writes, I watched Spontaneous. It's a fun comedy horror movie about young kids exploding randomly. They could be a drummer for Spinal Tap. Thank you, Michelle. Mary writes, Sorry We Missed You, Story of Working Class Desperation. Richard writes, I watched Mank and Sound of Metal. Mank had a great vibe and a great story. Sound of Metal was very hard to watch, and the audio of him losing hearing was painful to watch / listen to, especially as a musician who uses my hearing. Love Sound of Metal and really enjoyed Mank. I get it, Richard. That was the point. But yeah, it's not an easy watch. So hang in there. Steve writes, Nomadland. Jenny writes, Promising Young Woman. Sean writes, Another Round. Mark writes, Mustang. Taylor writes, Wonder Woman 1984, Juliet of the Spirits, and Jojo Rabbit. Beverly writes, Hugo. I'm glad you saw that one, Beverly. That was my daughter Emma's first Martin Scorsese film and still holds up today. And finally, Abby writes, I put movies on my to-watch list. Some were good and some just not. Thank you for telling us what you did, Abby. And next time, tell us which films you did. And there we go, friends. So there is that. And we want to raise a glass because we have dead people we like, because we never have time for dead people we don't like. Former child actor and then became grown man actor, Johnny Crawford passed away at the time of this recording. First credit, uncredited, it's IMDb, played the Italian boy with groceries in the film The Man in the Gray Flannel Suit. did a slew of TV, but of course is best known as Chuck Connors' son on The Rifleman from 1958 to 1963. Space Children, I can't remember if that's a Mystery Science Theater film or not. I do remember the trailer from It Came from Hollywood. But yeah, he was in The Space Children from 1968, Indian Paint from 1965, and then he started getting a little older and going through awkward phases. Village of the Giants from 1965, The Restless Ones also from 65, played Luke McDonald in El Dorado from 1966, The Naked Ape in 1973, The Inbreaker 1974. First film I saw him in, he was Slim in The Great Texas Dynamite Chase from 1976. Yeah, I watched that several times, and certain folks know exactly why. He also played Sutton in the 1981 video version of Macbeth. Wow, with Piper Laurie, Simon McCorkendale, Barry Primus, Millie Perkins. I have to look for that. Jeremy Brett is Macbeth. Pretty cool. And eventually showed up in, there was a William Tell series. I forgot about that. Wound up in the Gambler films. Kenny Rogers is the Gambler, as Maskett. And did a couple of those. The 13th Hour and his final credit in 2019, The Marshal. So, salute to Johnny Crawford. Passed away on April 29th at age 75. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. You got Indie Film Fest. You're in the post-Oscars afterglow. And hopefully you are staying safe, staying healthy, staying sane, being good to one another. And hopefully you find some new films that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. Hopefully next week I will have an update on and have finished season 2 of Laugh-In. A lot more movie stars showing up in season 2. So we'll talk about that and whatever else comes up between now and next week. So friends, hang in there. Thank you for listening. Go to WFYI.org/listen to support any public radio goodness anytime. It's never too late. Anyway, thanks for listening, and we'll check in with you next week. Or I'll check in with you next week. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What kind of parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!